Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
We don't start till Charlton starts. Those are the rules.
Basically, those are the rules.
Those are the rules.
Just theatrically shake my
cocktail shaker.
Charlton
Thorpe is in charge of all things. All things is what Charlton Thorpe is in charge of.
Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Ryssdal. How about we do that again? Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Ryssdal. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense. How about that?
It was great. You did a wonderful job. I'm Kimberly Adams. Thank you for joining us, everyone, on the YouTube live stream and on the podcast. This is our weekly happy hour. We call it Economics on Tap. We've got drinks. I've got a drink. Who knows what Kai has? We've got the news fixes, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to play a game of half full, half empty. It's going to be loads of fun, and we'll have a surprise guest host for half full, half empty.
I don't even
know who it is.
Well, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
All right, so what are you drinking?
Okay, so I'm trying out a new cocktail because I'm me. I've decided to start experimenting with shrubs, which are like vinegar-based
like
flavored things.
Oh.
Sure. No. They're like liquids.
That was a legit question. Okay. I have no idea.
It was a legit question. It was good.
Okay.
No, they're like vinegar-based flavored things that you add to cocktails or mocktails or cleverages or whatever, or sometimes just sparkling water, and they come in all sorts of different flavors.
Huh. Blueberry rosemary. All right. I believe we've had this conversation before, but have you ever worked as a bartender, or have you considered like moonlighting as a bartender? Because clearly you take a lot of pleasure and pride in your work in this regard.
Funny you should ask that. I did attempt it when I was living in Egypt to be a bartender for a little while, and I ended up being a bartender at these like private parties for like the super rich and like the rooftops of hotels overlooking the Nile, and they just stayed up too late, and I was like, yeah, no. So I was like, it got to be like 1-2 a.m. It was fun in the beginning, and I'm like handing out cocktails, and everyone thought it was so cool that a foreigner was doing the cocktails and the mixing. And then I was just like, yeah, it's too late. I need to go to sleep.
That's pretty
all right. So I am drinking a Blue Manhattan, which has a rye whiskey, a blueberry rosemary shrub from a local company called Element, and vermouth and a cherry garnish. So that is what I am drinking.
Have you tried it yet? Is this a fresh concoction?
Fresh concoction.
Hit us up. Let us know how it goes.
I swallowed wrong. It's actually good, though.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's actually good. Right. I just swallowed wrong. It's the vinegar. Right.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
That's funny.
No, it's actually tasty.
God,
I really like it. I just swallowed wrong. That's all. What's everybody else drinking?
Oh, that's so funny. Wait, hang on. So your sister's in the chat, and she says
she bartends
when she visits me, and then she says that's why the visits are so short. I am having a cup of coffee because, number one, it's really cold here in L.A., and I've got dinner plans tonight, and if I start drinking at 3:30 in the afternoon, I will not make it to dinner, and that would deeply irritate my wife. I'm using my Puabic coffee mug again, my favorite coffee mug in the world. I get no kickbacks from Puabic, by the way. They're just good stuff. All right, should we move on here? Should we?
Yours is the big news story of the day, and oh my goodness, I didn't understand it until I listened to Sabri's story today.
So Sabri did a great, great piece on Silicon Valley Bank, which has, as of this morning, ceased to exist and is now under state receivership and being managed by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. So it is the first FDIC-backed bank to go under since 2020. And this one is a biggie because a lot, and I mean a lot, of Silicon Valley does business with SVB, or did business with SVB until this morning. It affects payroll and the company's deposits and the personal accounts of company executives. It's a very big deal. The specific. So watch this space, because I'm sure we're going to be talking about it more. It's going to be a very busy weekend for the Fed and for Treasury before the banking system opens up again on Monday. The specific thing I want to talk about, though, is what Silicon Valley Bank did, which doesn't get almost any press, and that is venture debt. We talk a lot about venture capital, right?
Mm-hmm.
Venture capital is people gathering money together or using their own money and investing in a company and getting equity, getting shares of that company, right? And they gain on the upside and they lose on the downside. Silicon Valley Bank and some other really specialized banks do this thing called venture debt, where after getting venture capital investments, these companies, which will need more money because these startups run through capital at an astonishing rate, they need more money. They get venture debt, which are loans made by the specialized banks, which then sustain these companies. And part of the reason that SVB went under, I mean, there's a whole long bond market story as to why they went under, but part of the reason they went under is because of this venture debt and the way interest rates have been going. And we're going to be talking about more about this on Marketplace and probably on this podcast in the days and weeks to come if SVB turns into a very big deal. But it's a really interesting look at the innards of finance, specifically venture finance and even more specifically Silicon Valley startup venture finance. Fascinating. Could be a big deal. We don't really know yet.
All I could think of when you said, if it turns out to be a really big deal, a very big deal, was, SVB going to be a VBD?
VBD, there you go. That's right. Look, we'll take initials. FDIC, SVB, you know.
All of the alphabet soup.
It's amazing that we are back here with a major bank going under. This is, for the record, the second largest bank failure in this country ever, after Washington Mutual, which was my bank, by the way, back in the financial crisis. So this is a big deal. Hundreds of billions of dollars in assets.
Unbelievable. I saw this like flying by because I was running around all day today. I saw it flying by and I was like, what is happening? And so I had to go back and listen to Sabri's story. And I was like, oh, this is worse than I thought it was.
Yeah, he did a great job. He did a great job.
Yeah.
He did really well.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, so. Mine is also somewhat tech related. This is really bad. So there are data leaks and breaches and data stolen all over the country all the time. You know, we had that big Equifax data breach years ago. But this one is particularly bad. There is a health data breach that has gone down here in D.C. And it's a company called, let's see, where did it go? I think it's D.C. Link. But basically, it has more than 100, D.C. Health Link, which runs basically an exchange that has about 100,000 participants on it. But about 11,000 of those people work in the House and the Senate, here in D.C., in the district offices across the nation, or they're relatives of people who work for the federal government. And this is a very, very bad data leak. It's got like Social Security numbers. It's got health information. Mm-hmm. It's got people's names and addresses. And it seems like real information. And so the AP started. So basically, these hackers posted a sample of some of the files to prove that this was real. And the AP called some of those people to see if it was real. And it turns out it's someone who one of our colleagues knows very well.
Oh, is
and
that right?
And that's how they found out that their information was out there. And this is really scary. And members of Congress are freaking out. Their staffs are freaking out because, you know, you can just imagine the nefarious things that people can do with not just somebody's identity for identity theft, but their health information. Like, that's really bad. So I'm wondering what we're going to see as a result of this in terms of some not reputable news organization probably is going to take that stuff and do all sorts of stories. And the rest of us are going to have to talk about it once it's out there. And it's not great, but
no.
Yeah.
No. The news today is not great. Today is not a not great news day. Honestly.
So, somebody asked in the chat, is it a really bad leak just because it involves DC folks? No, it's a really bad leak because it involves health information, which is particularly, which is worse. But the reason it matters that it includes DC folks is when you talk about politicians and staffers having their information leaked, that means it can be weaponized for political purposes, not just by somebody running campaign ads, but also by outside actors, maybe foreign governments or people who want to blackmail a member of Congress or their families.
You know, it's interesting, and this is my naivete for being a zillion miles away from the Beltway, for which I am grateful every single day. But my initial reaction was it's a big deal in D.C. because, oh, this will definitely get people paying attention to this really critical problem in our data information infrastructure, and we'll certainly find legislation to take care of this. Ah, well.
Maybe we'll finally get a federal privacy law now.
Yeah, I'll take the under. I'm going to take the under.
But remember, very recently, the Biden administration put out an announcement. I don't think it was an executive order, but basically a cybersecurity strategy. And one of the things they said was that companies need to have more responsibility for keeping people's information private as opposed to putting the onus on the users to protect their information. And so this is kind of a classic example.
Yeah, it is a classic example, but nothing's going to happen until the penalties to companies are real and substantial, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know. Anyway.
All those things are true.
All day.
All right.
On that one all day.
Yes.
All right.
It's your
turn. We're going to what? We're going to do a news fix. We're going to take a quick break. We already did the news fix. Hello, Kai.
Yes.
So here's what we're going to do now. We're going to take a quick break, come back, round a half full, half empty. Here we go.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes every Sunday wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I didn't think I was going to like this, but I really do. It's quite different.
All right. Why would you? Yeah. All right, wait. Hold on. Stop. Mm-hmm. Why would you make a cocktail you're not sure you're going to like?
Because I want to experiment and try it. Okay. I won't know if I like it until I try it. And if I only try things I know I'm going to like, I'll never expand my palate.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. Says the creature of habit who never wants to try anything new.
Yes.
All right. Now we are going to do something new. We're going to play a game of half full, half empty. The game is not new, but the topics are. We're going to go through some news topics from the week and tell you how we are feeling about them, positive or negative, half full, half empty. And Drew is out today, but we have a surprise guest host. I don't know who it is. Strange person.
Hello, Kimberly and Kai. It's Francesca.
Oh, my lordy be. All right, so this is the new big boss here, people. We should tell people
who Francesca
is. You
hear her in the credits at the end of the show all the time. Francesca Levy, our director of digital.
Lord.
Wow. Is that your exact right title? You seem to do a lot of things.
It's executive director of something, but I help out wherever I'm needed.
There we go. Yes. And today, all of that. You know, here you are.
All right. Are you ready to play?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you half full or half empty on the possibility that companies could start bringing back pension plans?
Wow. I heard this story. Did you hear this?
I did not. And please tell me it was not on the show that I host.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. Don't worry. No, I think it was on David's show. It was on Marketplace Morning Report, where basically some companies, as a way to try to lure workers, because we are still, you know, in a tight labor market and companies are trying to figure out what they can do, some companies are starting to offer pension plans again. Not like full old school pension plans, but versions of it. And I'm going to go half full on it because, you know, we've heard for years companies complaining about workers just hopping from place to place to place. And it's like, well, if you don't make a commitment to your employees, they're not going to make a commitment to you. And a pension is a real incentive to stay in one place for some period of time.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also would just offer that much as you were talking about companies having to bear some responsibility for data breaches, there is an element of corporate citizenship here, right? That companies have an obligation to some degree to help their workers survive and keep going through their old age. And pensions are one really good way to do that, as opposed to putting the burden entirely as it's not entirely, mostly as it sits right now on 401ks and other retirement plans. So, yeah, I'm half full.
On the other hand, though, I do have to give the caveat, we are reading more and more stories about these pension plans that are just insolvent. And remember I was at some DC event and there was a guy who worked on, you know, research on pension plans. And he was like, one day somebody is going to crack open the lid on all of these state pension plans and they're going to run screaming into the night because they're in bad shape.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Yep. All y'all should look up something called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation and then look up how badly underfunded it is. But anywho.
All right. Half full or half empty on Oscar parties?
Go ahead.
Like I'm half full on the party component, half empty on the Oscars. Like I have zero intention of watching them, but if somebody invited me to an Oscars party, I'd go. I just won't pay attention to the Oscars. I'll pay attention to the people there. So I'm going to go half empty. What about you? Oh, I
watch them in the breach while I'm doing other stuff, right? I mean, it happens like at 5 o'clock here in LA time, right? And, you know, you got other stuff. You got to run kids around. You got, you know, whatever. So I watch them in the breach. Party schmarty, you know. Can I be neutral? I'm going to be neutral. I'm going to be half-half.
You can be neutral. Neutral. Half-half.
I'm going to be neutral. There we go. All right.
All right. Half full or half empty on business schools loosening their admissions requirements for laid-off tech workers.
I saw that story. I'm half full, although, God, I always have to have a caveat, don't I? There's no universals in this world. Half full, although I'm very curious how much these tech workers really need a business degree to get a job in this economy. And so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is it just a way to get people to spend money that they probably don't have to spend? But sure, I'll go half full. Why not?
Yeah, and I think also it's, you know, now's a convenient pausing time in your career, and you could take a couple of years maybe and go back to school if you want to. I don't think anybody needs an MBA, especially if they were already on some kind of track in technology. But if they want to, that's fine. The root of the story, though, is business schools lowering their admissions requirements. That is very interesting because that goes to standardized tests. It goes to elite schools getting first crack at the most elite students. And so I think, you know, a general lowering of the bar across higher education and up into graduate degrees would probably benefit us as a society, let me just say.
I've been doing, along with a couple of our colleagues, some reporting on the Inflation Reduction Act and all the money kind of filtering out into the economy. And I'm just seeing more and more of these jobs that make six figures out the gate with no college degrees.
Right.
And they cannot fill these jobs.
Yep.
They are desperate for people to do these things. So, all right. I think the next one is the one for the poll. So everybody in the YouTube chat, get ready. We are going to wait on y'all to weigh in before we give our takes on this next one. Francesca, go.
Mm-hmm. Are you half full or half empty on the rise in revenge reviews?
Oh, so this is a story that Matt Levin did for Marketplace yesterday. And apparently the deal is that, what's it called? Like the National Consumer Rage Survey or whatever it is, points out that there's been a huge rise in revenge reviews on social media and Yelp and all those things since the pandemic, that people are just venting their spleen whenever they are not getting what they felt they paid for, roughly translated. So that's the story. That is the story. And we're going to let the poll play.
One of the more challenging things about working at Marketplace is that we can't bash companies who do us wrong publicly. And so sometimes, and my sister in the chat will recall this very well from when we went on our cruise, sometimes I really want to say angry things publicly that I'm not allowed to say because of our ethics policy, which is it's just a good one because we may end up covering these companies and we shouldn't be out publicly doing that. But, you know, so there's a lot of like in my little notes sometimes or like my, you know, the notes app in your phone, I will sometimes write out the angry review just so it gets out of my system.
Yeah,
when I know I can't post it, and but yeah, so I hope everyone is writing their revenge reviews on my behalf if they are. Let's see, we've got 150 votes. They're still coming in.
Let's call it. Let's call it.
Let's call it. Okay, let's call it.
We can only kill so much time. Come on, right? There's got to be some lag there anyway. I don't know, right?
Peg says there's far too much anger in this world. Yes, you're right, Peg.
So, Kimberly, that's half full from you.
That's a half full from me. Yeah, right. I'm going to go half full.
So here's the poll. 158 votes, half empty 68, half full 31. I think I'm kind of half empty. I think I'm kind of half empty on that. I appreciate the need to, you know, feel better, but I just don't think you should go public with like one bad experience. You know what I mean? I mean, if you get like a repeat offender, well, first of all, why are you going back to that business? But I say, you know, praise in public and criticize in private. That's what I say.
Most of the time I would agree with you, but if it's someone or a company that really does something egregious, you want to also like, yes, it's getting it out of your system, but it's also warning other consumers. You know, in the circumstance that we had, like there was something that was done that like we really thought that other people should know about it. And it was pretty bad. And so some of it's revenge. Some of it is like punishment, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Like if you do this, you should be held accountable. And if I don't have the power to hold you accountable, at least let other people know to give you some accountability. So,
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Although, yeah, that's but fair. Especially for small businesses, though, I would be much less likely to write a bad review on a small business because that's the difference between like somebody having a bad day and you can destroy their business with a couple of bad reviews versus a huge corporation that should have infrastructure in place to not allow that to happen.
Totally.
Okay,
true.
I'm done. Totally off of my soapbox.
Right. Charlton.
Yeah.
There we go. Before we go, though, a very, very quick shout out to Francesca Levy, the boss, coming in, hanging with us on Friday
Francesca.
Afternoon. Yay, thank you. And we're done. Back on Monday. Before we go, though, a couple of quick things. Number one, it was like 3 years ago this weekend that COVID became a pandemic. And that's when this podcast went daily. And we did it because me and Molly at the time, but the staff, and I think the listeners too, needed a place. We needed a place to just be. And that's what this became. And it's evolved since then, and times are, while still uncertain, way less bleak. But we are still here trying to do what we do every single day. And this being our March fundraiser, you know what's coming next. We are aiming to raise $150,000. We are less than 10% of the way there, and here we are on the 10th of March, so we got a ways to go. marketplace.org/givesmart. There's a link in the show notes as well. Obviously, if you can help us, we'd appreciate it because we're here every day, whether you give or not. But if you give, it would be better, you know?
I probably shouldn't say that. Very we're here every day,
whether you give or not. Development's going to yell at me for saying that, but, you know.
Sure they are.
Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergsicker. Today's episode was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Drew Jostad wrote the theme music for Half Full, Half Empty, although he took the day off today, I guess. Antonio Barreras is our intern.
He deserves a day off. The team behind our Friday game is Mel Rosenberg, Emily McCune, and Antoinette Brock, who checked out our video early today. Marissa Cabrera is our acting senior producer. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcast. And you all know who Francesca Levy is, the executive director of digital.
Boom.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.